There were 50 shooting incidents in Bloomington Normal last year, a significant increase from the year before. A great number involved teens and young adults. Correspondent Edith Brady Lunny looks at the core issues involved in this surge with Reverend Andrew Held of City of Life Ministries and public defender Carla Barnes of McLean County. Andrew Held works with youth. He says there is a culture of acceptance of such violence.
What we're dealing with now is we're really dealing with young teens that were raised by generational adults involved with violence. And so you're just seeing from generation to generation to generation down. And so there is a huge issue with whether it's PTSD, which we don't talk a lot about in the neighborhoods when young people see violence and it's normalized and no one is taking our youth to counselors or talking about any of those violent things. Which creates a huge lack of empathy among our young people. I think when I go to funerals or vigils and the lack of emotion sometimes towards just other people and just that lack of empathy, when that happens among their own family, the gap that's there that happens to people who aren't related is just vast. And so that's a huge issue. The other issue is lack of fathers with our teens. Again, with funerals and vigils, a lot of moms, not a lot of dads, and also not a lot of adult mentors outside of the family working with the teens is the other huge piece. And so you add all that up.
It's like a powder keg situation.
Yeah.
It's, and when you say the lack of emotion with the teens, I tend to see it years later when they're in the criminal justice system. That's when I find that it is hitting them, the reality of their actions. They may not see it initially, but once they're incarcerated, we're talking about Department of Corrections sentencing with 18, 19, 20-year-old. And they're young. They're young adults. Right. And that's when the emotion comes in, because that's when the fear comes in that, look at what I've done and look at what the consequences are. So there has to be, we have to move with, there has to be some self-accountability. And I don't know how to teach that, because the long-term effects never go away.
Right.
You know.
And as a member of the Criminal Justice Coordinating Council, Carla, you have been involved in a lot of these criminal justice reform discussions and changes that have happened in McLean County in the past decade or so. But now the council is talking about wading into these issues surrounding youth-involved violence. Do we have the right people around the table with a CJCC now to move forward with that?
CJCC is aware that we need the right people to have that conversation. Andrew Held spoke with us about a month ago, I believe, about what his organization is doing. And our chief judge is well aware that we need more of those individuals and those organizations to come to the table to help us out and let us know what they're doing individually or what their organizations are doing, so that we can be in a better position to address the situation.
Right. And why is the Criminal Justice Coordinating Council the right model to work on this?
Because of the collaboration, everyone is at the table. Mm-hmm. The state's attorney's office is at the table, the public defender, the chief judge, the jail chaplain, and other community leaders are there. So that collaboration, that monthly collaboration that we have, is the proper place for that talk.
Right. And Andrew, you were talking to me a little bit earlier about the work that you're already doing. Every time we have one of these violent outbursts in the community, and this is kind of behind the scenes work, right? I mean, there's no program that's publicly identified that is getting the credit for this or getting the funding for this. But tell me a little bit about what's involved when there is a youth involved shooting, and what happens in the aftermath of that.
Yeah, so typically the first kind of response is, where are the other teens at? Where are their minds at with a response to the violence? Also a response to the families. This could be brothers, sisters of victims, moms typically. And so we will try to do house visits or contact whoever we can and talk to them and start this process of some type of healing, some type of connecting them to whether it be counselors or talking them out of the immediate response when nobody is thinking and emotions are high.
Do you find that the initial response is more violence?
I think it's two. I think it's more violence, and then I have other teens that separate themselves out of fear, and so they lock themselves away and don't come to our group settings, and then kind of just, hey, I have to take care of my brother, my sister, my family. If I leave, there's no one there to protect them has been some issues. And so then you're in this process of, okay, we got to get to you somehow. And that's usually the house visits. And it's not, you can't program that. You can't say, I have this program when there's a shooting and they're all going to come. It is old-fashioned footwork of calling, texting, Snapchatting. All those different things of just checking in.
And it's more of a hands-on approach to dealing with this. And that's been employed in other communities where they have dealt with the youth-involved violence by having coalitions form that even include the U.S. Attorney's Office as a resource to be involved in this. Carla, one of the things you said at the last CJCC was that a point person would be nice to have, and maybe Andrew Held could be that point person for the youth. What was your thinking in that?
Well, because there are so many other organizations that are out there on their own doing different types of work for this population. We have sororities, we have fraternities, we have the NAACP. And if we had one person who could identify what the need is and then direct them to that person or that organization, that collaboration can have some good outcome effects.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so many out there that we're not connected with, that we don't know about. Mm-hmm. Andrew was doing this on his own for quite some time before we were aware of it. And once we were aware of what Andrew was doing, we try to support him as much as we can now.
What do you think was the turning point to get the CJCC and the stakeholders involved in this?
The 50 gun violence that you spoke of. The chief judge he looked at that number and he said, there's something that we have to do about this. Of course, we were looking at jail population initially. Mm-hmm. It's always going to be there. That concern will always be there for us. But what else can we do now? And if we notice that these shootings are on the uptake, what can we do to scale it down and help that population?
Mm-hmm. So, Andrew, you've been doing this work with City Life and supporting yourself and your efforts. What does the community need to do to back you so that you can continue it and maybe expand it and become that important point person?
Mm-hmm. So first is funding. We need reoccurring donations that allows me to be able to work full time at this and not be distracted with second jobs, third jobs to try to make extra money, because this is at 6 a.m. you can have a phone call, midnight you can have a phone call. And that's not only for me. We need more staff members, which also requires more funding. Because some of the issues are when you have bivocational volunteers, and we really run on our volunteers are our core. But when you have families that work at State Farm 40 hours, 50 hours, they may have two kids, and then you're trying to pull those volunteers to come on a big group on a Monday night, or, hey, I really need you to spend a lot of time with this teen or teens, you're adding up a lot of hours. And so they burn out. They burn out because of time. They burn out because they're worried about their jobs. And then it's high emotions with what we do when we have teens that are killed, teens that are going to jail for life, or there's sexual abuse or physical abuse. And so all that stress builds up. And so working two jobs is just too much. So we need more staff, along with the myriad of volunteers and other community partners for collaboration. Because this works best when I'm working with Scott Day at BHS or Ms. Savetin in the classroom, and can work with administration or Carla or Don Knapp and just different community people coming together. Because it typically takes, I think the number is about 7 adults to mentor one teen. If you have 7 adults who are speaking positive to that teen, then your chances for success skyrocket. And right now, the community is struggling to have a one-on-one mentorship for each teen.
And is there a perception problem, too, that the community has to address in the way that they view some of these young adults and teens in their community, whereas instead of viewing some teens as walking threats, to instead look at them for the potential they might have as productive members of the community? Is that a problem?
Absolutely. I think every incident, Facebook lights up. And we get the comments of, it's like Chicago, get rid of everybody.
Which is such a myth anymore.
These
children are from here. Mm-hmm. They're not from Chicago. They're not all coming down from Peoria. These are our children. And I think that if more people saw them as ours, they're part of our community, then maybe they would invest more in their future, because they're going to be here and they can make our area, our Bloomington Normal population better if we can invest more into them, put more manpower into these children.
And Andrew, what have you seen just with your group of young people that you're working with now? You have seen some of them even be caught up in this violence, right? Could you speak to some of that reaction?
Yeah, even just this year, looking back a couple of years ago with DeJuan Griffin in our program. And even looking at a youth like DeJuan, who, a nice kid, a loving kid, misguided in just a lot of areas. But these kids are not all out just evil kids where you just think, oh, they're all just a waste and there's nothing in them. There's a lot of hurt, misguidance, untruths that are told to them. And so, as we just look at that and just, I go through pictures of just the last 10 years of ministry of teens, and you're going dead, arrested, dead, life in prison.
And they do need to put the guns down too.
Yeah.
They need to put the guns down. And they grew up with each other. They go to elementary school. Mm-hmm. They love each other. There's that community within the group of kids. They have those pivotal moments that they may have to change their environment, and it's hard to do for some of them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
When they have their best friends are now carrying guns. Mm-hmm.
So the access to guns, you think, has been a game changer in terms of the more serious consequences that come from these disputes between kids who know each other.
Yes, because there's the first step is, having a gun, and then you carry the gun on you, and then it's going to be a lot easier in the heat of your little 19-year-old brain to then use the gun.
Right. And from the public defender standpoint, what resources would you like to have available to help these young people once they are caught up in the system to maybe be able to pull them back from that cliff of serious incarceration?
We need more people like Andrew that can help and advocate, that can help guide them in the right direction. But once I see them, I'm never going to say it's too late, because there's a whole lot of mitigation that I can give on their behalf. But long-term, they need more mentors. More community leaders need to step up.
Yeah. Do we have enough diversion programs, do you think, for young people as well?
That's something that we need to look into.
Give them a second chance, maybe other than a long-term incarceration when they are still at the 19-year-old stage of their life, regardless of the seriousness of
the offense.
Of what they have done. What role do the schools play in this, Andrew? What can they do?
I mean, they are almost a first line of defense, in a sense, because our youth spend 7 hours a day at the school. The average parent spends 15 minutes with their child across the board. So when you look at that, our teachers really spend a lot of time raising kids and pouring into life. And so I really respect what they do. And as I'm in BHS, it is a collaborative effort between administration, between the other community partners that are inside of the schools, like Project Oz, us, a few others that are in the schools. And so you have teachers connecting with the guidance counselor, connecting with administration, connecting with outside mentors. And that just needs to happen more and more. Because a lot of our kids are going to school for normalcy, for some kind of structure. Sometimes they're not eating. And so I know in the self-contained classrooms at BHS, those two teachers, Ms. Mokri and Ms. Savetin, are washing clothes. They are providing hygiene products. There is a clothing in 108. There's a place where kids can get coats, underwear, socks, all those things. A lot of those students are coming in dealing with, my dad just pointed a gun at me, and now I have to deal with this. And so they're just dealing with all these issues before they even are teaching math or science. Mm-hmm. And so the
teachers have to deal with the trauma of the mm-hmm. students, because that's lifelong trauma that they're dealing with.
Absolutely.
Is housing an issue for some students?
That's probably one of our biggest issues, is teens getting kicked out, parents just at their wit's end and not having the help and support, or just not there. And so you got teens just running around. And so a transitional housing is a definite need. That and more adults willing to foster our youth. We've got too many kids in the foster system. And so if we had parents who would step up, and it's hard, there's struggles to that. However, it's needed. If our kids have a stable home where there's structure, I believe that will be key to battling this. So in that transitional housing, if there's a place where adults can stay in the housing with them or be able to monitor them would be just key.
In some instances, it might be a matter of needed emergency housing, right? Not just transitional, but mm-hmm. on a moment's notice for a place for a teen to go.
And when you're talking about a teen that's 16, 17 years old, that's involved in violence, you have to really search for the right home and the right mm-hmm. person to take on that responsibility.
And as you say, there are too few available foster mm-hmm. Foster families available out there. So what's the next step for all this, for the effort? I mean, I think mm-hmm. by the CGACC taking this on, it's been brought to a very big table.
Yes. Yes,
so
and
where
the
do
conversation
we go from
is
there?
Conversation is ongoing. What's wonderful is that the chief judge is willing to look at this. This was on his own accord. He noticed this, and he wants to approach it and do something. So the beginning steps are here. At the next CJCC, Andre Hershey from the Jewel Foundation is going to speak about what he does. So the chief judge is interested in finding out all of these different individuals mm-hmm. like Andrew Held and Andre Hershey who are out there working with this population and seeing what we can do as a community.
So part of it is just doing an inventory
of what we have,
of what is already out there and what's being done with it. What role should the police be playing in all this effort, Andrew? And we know they do some programs to bring police officers into more of a normal, casual setting with the community, whether it's coffee with a cop or ice cream with a cop or different things. But, you know, those are so short-term that you can't really argue that you're building any real relationships there that will carry over. What more do you think could be done from the law enforcement side of things?
Yeah, I always think that if we had officers, and again, here's the tension of officers who work late, who are putting in lots of hours, high stress, but if they find time to naturally volunteer, whether it's our program or other programs or in the high school where they honestly just want to get to know the story of a youth. Not so much this program. Oh, we have this program. But when you actually have an officer, I want to get to know your story and maybe walk alongside of you.
And go into the neighborhoods and be more proactive and reaching out. And there was an event that we had, I believe it was last year, at the when we took them out on an outing, Don Knapp and I.
Oh, for us, at Mass VR.
That's right.
Yes.
When the police officers showed up to Mass VR, the kids were like, why are the police here? Why the police is here? Yeah. But after about 15, 20 minutes of interaction with the police officers, it was amazing to see the change.
Yeah.
It was amazing. They were friendly. They're shaking hands. They're talking. They were playing the games together. It changed their attitude, at least for that moment. So if we had more of those positive interactions, I think it could make a difference.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Is there anything else either of you want to add about what you see as the core issue here, or what's missing, I think, that's not being addressed by this? Because my sense is that's what the CJCC's interest is in this, is to see what's already being done and find a way to form this collaboration that we've seen in Champaign and Peoria and other cities where it's just very a focused collaboration on this violence issue.
And I'm glad that we have that collaboration, that we're beginning to look at that. But Andrew spoke briefly about a lack of a positive male role model in the home. We need more parental involvement. It all begins there. We have to teach our children the consequences of their actions. They need to be well aware, because once you're involved in a violent crime, once guns are attached, it's hard to change the minds of the average citizen about who this person really is.
Right. Mm-hmm. Anything else, Andrew?
It's a struggle.
Again, just mentors. And I think another piece is indigenous leadership. I think a lot of times we have outside people who are good-hearted, or people just wanting to help, and they're not quite sure what it takes, and it takes time, and it takes a lot of you. And so just looking over the years of good-hearted people coming in in a blaze of glory and leaving just as quick. Mm. And so just taking that inventory of who's consistent and indigenous, but then also partnering with people who aren't, outside of our community and others, and really having a collaborative model.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Reverend Andrew Held of City of Life Ministries and McLean County Public Defender Carla Barnes speaking with WGLT correspondent Edith Brady Lunny.